Every day, Bill Frank...
We're going to be doing one thing and one thing only.
...talks with the best guests in America about business.
You mean business?
Monkey business?
Are you ready to get down to business?
All right! Everybody's here and that means we can get down to business.
Entertainment.
Entertainment.
The entertainment capital of the world.
What kind of entertainment?
It's a storm of entertainment that brings down the house.
Sports.
Game on.
A grueling test of strength, speed, and stamina.
Wow, just like in the pros.
And the local community.
The rage in local radio.
Find out what's going on locally.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time now for the Bill Frank Radio Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA. Now, here's your host.
Bill Frank.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. You can also hear me streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. The Bill Frank Radio Show is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. As we get closer to the election, these two subjects dominate the conversation. Each of my guests will discuss either business or politics, or both. My next guest simplifies the complex and often confusing subject of the federal budget. He'll explain where the trillions of dollars come from, where they go, and why inaction over the budget imperils the future from his book titled Red Ink. David Wessel is an economics editor for The Wall Street Journal and writes The Capital Column, a weekly look at the economy and forces shaping living standards around the world. David joined The Wall Street Journal in 1984. He appears frequently on National Public Radio's Morning Edition and on WETA's Washington Week. David is the author of Red Ink, Inside the High Stakes Politics of the Federal Budget. He also wrote the New York Times best-selling In Fed We Trust, Ben Bernanke's War on the Great Panic, and, along with co-author Bob Davis, wrote Prosperity, A Look at the Middle Class. David graduated from Haverford College in 1975. He was a Knight Bagot Fellow in Business and Economics Journalism at Columbia University. And in 2009, he was awarded an honorary doctorate in Human Letters by Eureka College. He also shares two Pulitzer Prizes. Joining us from the East Coast. Hi, David. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
Well, thank you for being a guest on the show, and thank you for being a thought leader. This is a heady topic, and I want to start right off the bat, if I can, with a disclaimer for my listeners, because we're going to be talking about numbers that are hard to get your arms around. We're going to be talking about millions, billions, and trillions of dollars. Now, we use these somewhat interchangeably. We just think, you know, a million, the next progression is a billion. But it's not quite that straight line of progression. So I want to put some perspective on this, and I want to relate it to time. So if you took 1 million seconds, 1 million seconds is equivalent to about 13 days. If you took 1 billion seconds, that would be the equivalent of 31 years. So going from a million to a billion goes from 13 days to 31 years. 1 trillion seconds is the equivalent of 31,688 years. So if we looked back in history 1 billion seconds, we would have Neanderthals wandering the earth. That just to give you some perspective of the size and the scope of these numbers. Now to you, David. We're hurling towards this fiscal cliff at the end of the year that everybody's talking about when $1.2 trillion in automatic spending cuts and $5.8 trillion in additional taxes kick in. The fiscal cliff's impact amounts to about 4% of the U.S. gross domestic product, GDP for short, if Congress fails to do anything about it. The result, according to the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, is that the economy will shrink or contract by 1.3% in the first half of 2013. Now, I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but why should citizens and businesses think Congress, which right now is on a five-week recess, will act on this to resolve it before the end of the year?
Well, that's a good question, and they might not. I mean, I think it's already beginning to take its toll on the economy because the uncertainty about what's going to happen to taxes and spending is leading businesses in particular, and maybe even some consumers, to pull back. Look, what happened here was last year Congress tried to force its own hand. In order to get permission from Congress to raise the national credit card limit, the President and Congress agreed to a plan that would put these automatic spending cuts and tax increases into effect unless they find some alternative plan. And they made it painful because they thought it would force them to do something. Well, it's getting kind of close, and they're not even close to doing anything about it. So what happens really will depend a lot on what happens in the election. I think if Mitt Romney wins the election, chances are he'll have a pretty Republican Congress. It'll be pretty easy for him to get Congress to just waive the whole thing and say, I need some time to work on a budget of my own. The interesting thing comes if Barack Obama is reelected. He's unlikely to have a very Democratic Congress, more Democratic than it is now, and he'll have to deal with Republicans. And as a result, we'll have a big game of chicken. And the president may say to the Republicans in Congress, look, I'm willing to negotiate this thing, but you got to agree with me that we raise taxes. And if you don't, this horrible thing is going to happen to the American economy. It's a kind of game of chicken, and it would be really interesting if it were a movie instead of our economic lives.
Well, it certainly would be an interesting premise for a movie, David, but haven't we been here before? I mean, we played this game of chicken when we were faced with raising the debt ceiling last year, and the net result of that was not very good for the United States. In fact, our credit rating was downgraded for the first time in U.S. history as a result of the gamesmanship that we were experiencing. What's to say if we do gamesmanship, this won't happen again?
There's nothing. In fact, it could very well happen again. I think that the CBO report, what they do is a kind of mechanical thing, and they say if all these spending cuts and tax increases went into effect and remained in effect, it would be devastating for the economy. I have no doubt that's true. But what I'm worried about is members of Congress will think, like, well, we'll go over the fiscal cliff in January 1st, and then we'll spend 3 or 4 weeks, and we'll have a crisis, but we'll fix it all and everything. We'll put all the eggs back together after Humpty Dumpty falls over the wall, to mix metaphors for a minute. And I'm concerned that, as we learned last summer, that the lack of confidence that Americans have in their government when the people act like this and the possible damage to our reputation in international financial markets could be very serious. And it's very hard for any economist in their models to know what that would be. It's going to be hard for the politicians to sell us on the bitter medicine we're going to have to take of spending cuts and tax increases if we all think they're a bunch of bumbling idiots.
Well, that is true. The congressional approval rating is down around 10%. My guest is David Wessel, author of the book Red Ink, Inside the High-Stakes Politics of the Federal Budget. And for the politicians who are in office, who should know better, this comes as something of a surprise that they think that they can fix this. Because I was shocked to read in your book that nearly two-thirds of the annual federal spending is on autopilot. It goes out the door without even an annual vote by Congress, two-thirds of it. In 2009, for the first time in the nation's history, every dollar of revenue had been committed to Social Security, Medicare, and other entitlements before Congress even walked in the door. So I guess my first question is a very fundamental one. In business and in households, we all do something that's known as zero-based budgeting. You know, we just assume that everything's on the table and anything could be cut. What prevents Congress from doing zero-based budgeting?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that's an accurate description of how Americans do their budgeting. I mean, one of the things we learned during the financial crisis is that a whole lot of people spend more than they take in because they run up a credit card bill and hope that they can get a home equity loan to pay it off. But that put aside, there's nothing to stop Congress from zero-based budgeting. I think Jimmy Carter had a big campaign to do that.
Right.
It's just that they won't do it. And you're right, that because they've made all these promises to pay benefits, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, veterans, farm subsidies, and, of course, the interest on the federal debt, they've committed a lot of the money before they get in at the beginning of every year, and then they spend the rest of the year arguing about the other third. And that's one of the reasons we're in this mess. If they had to confront every once in a while, how much should we spend on health care? And if we think we're spending too much on health care, what are we going to do to change the system so we don't have to spend so much next year? That could really force some action. But I don't see that in sight.
Okay. My guest is David Wessel. Now, David, your book is filled with all kinds of interesting things, but there was a wonderful infographic that details where the money in the federal budget is actually spent. So break it down for us, if you will. Where does the money go?
Well, you can divide it into some pretty big chunks. About one-fifth of the budget goes to Social Security, about another fifth goes to Medicare and Medicaid, and another fifth or so goes to all other benefits plus interest on the debt. So that's 60% of the budget in round numbers. Then everything else is you can divide roughly in half, 20% for defense and 20% for everything else, you know, NIH, national parks, salaries for the president, secretary, and so forth. So that's basically the best way to look at it, I think. It's not the best way, it's a good way to look at it. And what I think people focus on is that category of domestic spending, which is about 20%, which is the stuff that everything from bridges to nowhere to how much pay raises government employees get, gets a lot of attention, even though that's not really the biggest part of the budget or the part that's been growing.
Well, no, it's not, and that's the part that we do focus our attention on. So let's address it head on if we can, because there's a popular misconception that people have that the federal budget is filled with waste and with fraud. And we see it. We see the $400 toilet seat, the $200 hammer in some of these defense contracts and so forth. So we are led to believe that there's all kinds of waste and fraud. How true is that? Dispel that, if you will.
Well, I think that there obviously is waste and fraud. We know that in the federal budget. Excuse me, you can't spend $3.6 trillion and not have some of that. But I think people are misled to think that there's a line item for waste and we can somehow get rid of it. and it's also some of what one person considers waste is another person's vital service. So I'm all for getting rid of the waste and fraud and abuse, and I think it's important because to the extent that we see these horror stories, whether there's some doctor ripping off Medicare or some GSA employees having these high-flying conventions in Las Vegas, they just erode people's confidence in government. But the fact is, that's not even a significant part of the deficit problem. And if we could get rid of it all, we'd still have a huge deficit, and we'd still be spending more than we take in.
That is an important point to make. My guest is David Wessel, author of the book Red Ink. So, David, I want to come back to your breakdown, which was a wonderful breakdown, and I want to focus in on one particular component. You said about 20% goes to Social Security, 20% to Medicaid, Medicare. Defense gets another 19% or so. Interest payments, that's the part I want to glom in on. Interest payments
are
about 6.4%. Now, how will the interest component grow as we borrow more from China and Japan? I found it interesting that net interest payment on government debt in 2011 was $230 billion. That was more than the combined budgets of the Department of Commerce, Department of Education, Energy, Homeland Security, Interior, Justice, State, and all of the federal courts put together. How is this debt component going to change over time?
Well, the president's budget tells us what he thinks should happen, and he thinks and hopes that the economy will improve and that Congress will accept his proposals, some of which would save money and some of which would raise taxes. So let's say the president gets his way. The president's budget tells us that 5 years from now, instead of 6% of our budget going to interest, 12% would go to interest because we're borrowing more and because interest rates are bound to go up over the next 5 years as, please God, the economy improves. And that's one reason why we have to do something about this, because that means on the course we're on, more and more of the money we give to the government will go to pay interest on the debt. And as you point out, half of that will go to foreigners.
All right. That's fair enough. My guest is David Wessel, author of the book Red Ink. So, David, in your book, you actually pay kudos to the Congressional Budget Office, or the CBO for short. You think it's one of the institutions that actually works well in Washington. The CBO estimates that it estimates our federal deficit. So what are the federal deficit projected to be? And aren't these projections really made on very, very optimistic growth scenarios?
Well, not really. I mean, what happens is that we ask the Federal Budget Office, the Congressional Budget Office, to tell us what happens if the ship of government continues to sail in the direction it's going. They do have to make some guesses about how fast the economy will grow. They've guessed wrong in the past. Economists always guess wrong. Sometimes they're optimistic, sometimes they're not. But that's not really what the big problem is. The problem is that we tell them, tell us where you think the ship is going, and that requires them to either assume that Congress won't steer the wheel or try and guess whether Congress will turn the wheel one way or the other. And those projections are always wrong because who the heck knows what Congress is going to do. I don't think the Congressional Budget Office is some kind of magic soothsayer that has the answers. I just think that compared to all the other institutions in Washington, they do the best job of calling it as they see it and give it the politicians a kind of roadmap so they can see what happens if we turn left at the next corner, what happens if we turn right. And that's very valuable because unless you have kind of a common understanding of what the facts are, how big the debt is, where it's going, if you do nothing, it's hard to know what you want to do about it.
All right. My guest is David Wessel. So, David, do a little compare and contrast. The CBO talks about the deficit. Our two candidates for president, President Obama and candidate Romney, each have a budget deficit plan. How do those plans differ?
Well, actually, it's hard to answer that precisely because particularly Governor Romney has not put out a deficit plan. He's made a lot of promises, some of which aren't all consistent, and President Obama hasn't put out a plan that tells us what he would actually do if he were reelected. But there are a couple things we can tell. Barack Obama thinks the government should be and needs to be bigger than Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney has endorsed a budget plan that Paul Ryan, a Republican in the House, has put together that's pretty austere and would cut a lot of spending. Mitt Romney, though, says he thinks we should spend more money on defense than we do now and more money than Barack Obama would spend. So there you have a thing. Romney wants smaller government, but more defense. That means less on everything else. And finally, there's the question of taxes. President Obama says that we can't do this without raising taxes. He claims he can limit the tax increases to the top 2% of the population. We'll see about that. Governor Romney says he can do it without raising taxes at all, which implies very stiff spending cuts or some kind of super optimistic projections about what the economy will do.
All right. David, let's drill down, if we can, and just take a look at one segment of the federal budget. And specifically, I want to look at Social Security. I know there are many from which to choose, but I want to choose Social Security. And I want to start with the basic premise. Is Social Security bankrupt, or will it be bankrupt soon?
Social Security is not bankrupt today. It is spending more in benefits than it collects in taxes, so that's not good. But it's got a lot of money that it's accumulated over the years from past surpluses. It is on its way to be bankrupt. If nothing is done by 2033, which sounds like a long way off, but it's really only 20 years away, there'll only be enough money in the trust fund from accumulated surpluses of the past to pay three-quarters of the promised benefits. So if absolutely nothing happens, benefits will be cut by a quarter 20 years from now. That's pretty close to bankruptcy, if you ask me. It can be fixed. It's not that hard on the substance. It involves finding some more revenues or raising the retirement age or changing the benefit formula so we pay people less than they're currently promised or some combination of those three. And there are plenty of plans around to do it. The problem is entirely political. The politicians don't have the guts to do it.
It takes political will. My guest is David Wessel. He's explaining where the trillions come from, where they go, and why inaction imperils our future with a federal budget from his book, Red Ink. David, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Red Ink?
I think I wanted to take away that this isn't so complicated, that you can understand it, and you should understand it if you're a voter, and we got to get three things right. How much do we spend on health care, and how do we restrain the growth of health care? How much should we spend on defense, and how much is too much? And should we raise taxes, and if so, on whom? If we could answer those questions, everything else would fall into place.
You make it sound so simple. In the real world, I'm not sure it's going to be quite that easy. My guest has been David Wessel, author of the book Red Ink. David, you've definitely piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
Well, I have a website, www.davidwessel.net, and there's an excerpt of the book printed there and a few other things.
Ah, that is great. David, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
You're welcome.